very much appreciate the opportunity to be together again today. And Jen, thank you and Mass Waterworks for arranging the logistics for this conversation each week. A reminder, I believe that this conversation, like all of the other ones, our weekly calls are being recorded. And we take these recordings and put them up on our website afterwards as a reference and for people that couldn't hear it when the initial call happened. Secondly, I think most people are on mute. I think everybody's on mute, and there are provisions to unmute yourself. I think it's *6 if you're on the telephone. If you're on the computer, I think you're doing something else. So if we, when we open the floor later, either to some of the people on the call that may be presenting information or people that are asking questions, you know, we'll remind people to do that again. Also a reminder that on these calls, we do have both the DEP headquarters drinking water program and regional staff, just to make sure that if there are things we need to follow up on, we are doing so. And so they will continue to be part of this. I suspect you'll be hearing from drinking water staff in response to some of the questions we got in this morning, helping me address some of those questions. I believe this week again are joined by Jane Downing of EPA, which has been great. She's been with us on these calls weekly. And I wanted to, as we always do, offer Jane an opportunity to give EPA updates before I provide the state update. So, Jane, if you could unmute yourself and provide us with any updates you'd care to provide us with this afternoon.
Thank you, Commissioner Suberg. And it's very exciting for me because I get to finally join you in Zoom. So that's a positive thing. Today we are excited to report that EPA and FEMA offered to ship 60,000 cloth masks to Massachusetts utilities, both drinking water and wastewater. And we wanted to reach out to all size systems, large and small, throughout the state. And under the leadership of the commissioner and his team, and with the exceptional partnership of Jen and Mike Knox and many, many utilities from all over the state, we were very happy that the state was able to submit a distribution plan last Friday. And I won't steal the thunder from the commissioner on the logistics, but I just want to thank all of you for jumping in at the last moment. It was quite extraordinary to get it done in just a few days. And it was extremely important to have met that deadline because we found out this week that unfortunately the remaining states will be challenged, that the effort may be on pause to better help the states versus the infrastructure, which we understand, and there'll also be an opportunity to work through the states. So great work on that. Without being overly optimistic, we hope that the shipment will happen in 2 weeks. And again, with 60,000 masks, you have quite a challenge ahead of you, but with extraordinary work of everybody chipping in, I think you've got a plan that will assist so many utilities across the state. So I will leave the logistics to the state to get into that. But I really do want to thank all of you for doing that in that short time frame. The other thing I wanted to bring up quickly is that with all of the COVID, we sometimes forget that next week is Drinking Water Appreciation Week. And EPA continues to be so impressed with the water sector, particularly during these very difficult days of the pandemic. We'd like to try to use our social media to celebrate the faces of the workforce. So if anybody is so inclined to take a picture or have somebody take a picture of workers or one worker or many workers please do so. And we will be using it next week and then in other events later on. You could mail me a picture, downing.jane@epa.gov. And then the last thing is just a very small item, but as we think about what our challenges might be ahead of us, I want to share that there is an item that came through nationally, a utility in California that had problems finding liquid oxygen. They went out for bid, only one manufacturer out of four completed the bid, and it was very, very expensive. So let's keep our eyes on liquid oxygen. I know there's been one or two incidents that we've resolved at the local level, but it could be a problem coming up. And I think that's it. Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you for all you do.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Jane, for that update. And thank you for the for your advocacy for the masks. I know, you know, as you were indicating, it's difficult to find PPE. We've certainly been talking about it on these calls, and the fact that Massachusetts is in line to get these 60,000 masks over the next couple of weeks, I know is a big part of Region 1 and your personal advocacy. So thank you for doing that. I will mention that, I'll give Jen a chance to, you know, stay on this topic a little bit too, but as long as Jane, you know, with Jane mentioning it, we did coordinate closely with Mass Waterworks, a number of utilities, other partners, New England Waterworks, NEWEPIC, NUIA, a number of groups that RCAP, a number of groups that we work closely with, but to develop a proposal that would allow us to receive in Massachusetts and distribute to water and wastewater utilities these masks, as Jane indicated in previous calls and made clear to all of us. The masks were coming. The expectation is that we needed to have a plan in state to deliver it, and that they were also looking for some, you know, tracking to make sure that we delivered it, in fact, to water and wastewater utilities. And so in short order, we tried to put together a proposal that we submitted to EPA. The first thing we realized is that we needed to make sure that if these things were arriving in state, they were arriving in places that we could further distribute them from, recognizing that, you know, there are systems all over the Commonwealth from east to west. There is a survey, and I'm sure Jen will have more to say about that, out right now, asking you some basic questions about needs. We worked with the utilities, and I want to particularly recognize the MWRA, the Greater Lawrence Sanitary District, the Upper Blackstone, and City of Worcester, DPW, and the Springfield Water and Sewer Commission as places where the initial distributions will arrive. And from there, we're developing plans to make it easy for people to come in and get the masks from those locations when they arrive. So we will have more discussions about the details of that. We're working on them right now as we wait for the masks to arrive. But each of those facilities stepped up and said that they would be trying to help the federal government, and then in turn the state government, make sure that distribution to all of you could be as organized and as convenient as possible. So I really want to acknowledge those utilities. I want to acknowledge those partners, and particularly I want to acknowledge Jen from MWWA for helping organize this. So I'll pause here. I don't know if, Jen, there's anything you want to mention about the details of it, you know, or any of your own perspectives on this particular issue right now.
Sure, Commissioner, thank you. So it's really important. I think the most important thing at this point is for utilities to go on to that survey and to fill out your needs, because that's how we're going to figure out where the best distribution opportunities are, how many masks are going to each location. So if you haven't yet done so, please get on to the SurveyMonkey. I will put it in the chat so that those of you who are online We'll have that information available to you. We are asking that only one person per utility do that survey. We want to try to eliminate duplication so that it's easier for us to sort through it. So if you could just designate one person for your utility to fill that out. And it is for water and wastewater utilities. And so, as the commissioner said, they're coming into central points, and then we're going to try to identify some other utilities across the state who can pick them up in those places and have them available. And Mass Rural Water and RCAP Solutions have offered their services as well if there are very small systems who are unable to get to the more centralized locations. So please do fill out the survey, and as the and Jane said, hopefully in 2 weeks we'll have the masks and figure out the concrete distribution.
Great, thanks for that, Jen. And you know, we'll keep working on it and keep people informed. Brief things. I wanted to acknowledge that I think we have Mike Maynard from the licensing board on. Mike, do you want to unmute yourself and see if there are any updates you'd like to provide?
Yeah, hi, it's Michael Maynard. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I'll give you a rundown on some of the things that we've been doing. I know there was a question that came in last week, and I followed up detail. The question was Mass DEP, if Mass DEP is issuing violations, will DPL reprimand or punish the operators? So I spoke to General Counsel Bruce Hopper, and his basic take on it was it's business as usual. So all complaints that come into DPL are evaluated individually and based on their merit, and then brought to the Board of Certification to be reviewed. And then at that point in time, the board decides oftentimes whether it's going to be pushed to investigations or prosecution or rejected. So that was a follow-up on a previously issued question. Another question that came in was that the PSI, who offers the exams, was going to open their exam sites on May 1st. But based on the governor's latest stay-at-home order till May 18th, PSI is reevaluating whether or not they're going to open their exam sites in Massachusetts. So I would proceed that the exam sites are probably going to be closed until May 18th because PSI, which is the exam provider, the location, follows the dictates of the local and state government. But I will follow up on that once PSI makes a further determination. The TECs are coming in and they're being issued. DPL has been running the Cori and Sorbs. That internal procedure is worked out and a number of TECs should be going out. I think we're up to about 15. So most of those should be issued this week. A question came in also moments ago from Jen, whether or not, because the exam locations are closed currently or may continue to be closed through May 18th, should the individuals who cannot take the exam and pass the exam submit a TEC? Well, the system would submit the TEC, that individual's name on it, and their experience, and then each individual on that, each individual application is reviewed for its merit, and a determination is made from that point. So I think the point being, if they can't take the exam and the system wants to put them on a TEC, please submit that to DPL, send it to Drinking Water Board at mass.gov with a CC to myself, and to the P director, as mentioned in previous questions. And I think the fee has been waived by DPL for that. The that's boom, boom, TECs. TCHs, A question was brought up recently at a board meeting on Friday that there was interest from operators whether or not the board was going to waive TCH requirements for this period. It will continue to be brought up and discussed. We are 6 months into a 24-month cycle. So we didn't feel like it was, we still have 18 months left in this cycle to, to change the TEC requirements for licensing. And another point that was brought up, we will continue to discuss it, but one of the points that was brought up also was that this is a time when there are additional training courses that are coming out online that can be reviewed by the operators, and it's critical that the operators keep taking trainings and staying as current as possible. So we will continue to bring that up at the board meetings. PSI, TCH, I think that's about it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Thanks for the update, and thanks for being on the call in case there are any follow-up questions. I did want to highlight a couple of other things, before we get into the questions we received. First of all, we did update questions and answers, our FAQs, again on our website. I think shortly after we were together last week on the call, we spend some time writing things up that we talked about. In some cases when we dealt with it on the call, we write that up. In some cases, we also tried, if it was an answer that required some additional work, we tried to highlight, we tried to do that, and we try to highlight that on these calls when we do that. We did get a question last week about the intended use plans for the SRF. I think we got that both on the drinking water and the wastewater side. There should be an announcement later today with the publication of the list. The Clean Water Trust has tried to be flexible, in terms of the process that comes after it. But I know people we have some utilities that are interested, saying they're ready to go on some contracting documents. And so I'm happy to report that we're moving forward on the IUP. A couple of other, issues that we cover each time. In terms of testing, we do not have a priority protocol for testing yet. As you know, this is something that your industry and the wastewater industry have raised as an important issue. We have raised this with the command center. At this point, there is no state program. People, if they're dealing with a situation where they feel like somebody needs to be tested, the first instance is still to deal with your local health authorities or a personal care physician. The only thing I would add is if you have a situation where you're really you're just not able to find the testing, I would say, let us know about it, and we will see if we can provide some help on that particular situation. But again, right now we don't have a bigger systemic answer, although, I acknowledge that this is something that's important and you're going to want to keep talking about. On economic impacts, we have continued to make sure that your views about the importance of looking ahead and thinking about how the economic impacts of this emergency are considered, and we've made sure that we've continued to raise this with our contacts at the command center and other places. I will say I am not any great, I don't have any great individual insights on this, but I do notice from media that there are talks about whether a stimulus package for state and local government types of functions is under consideration. We will keep monitoring those developments, and I assure you that I've spoken personally to our secretary, to people that represent our secretariat at the command center and others, about your very real concerns and some of the some of the important analytical work that's been done and that we would expect people to do when they talk about the economic impacts of this emergency. So with that, I'll go to some of the questions some questions that we got in last week, and I might ask either Kathy or Yvette or Damon to help us with the latest thinking on this. And the question is this: I'm wrapping up my CCR and completing the certification form, Section F good faith delivery methods. We deliver to public places, City Hall, the DPW, the library, and schools. Even though I can go and deliver to these places, they are closed to the public currently. Can I still check off that they are posted in these public places? And this gets into what do you do with good faith efforts. And I'm going to ask the drinking water program here to give us some guidance on that.
This is Damon. I can jump in if they want me to. So I think it's important to remember the good faith effort objective here, which is to make sure that non-bill paying customers who consume your water can see a CCR. So what we're showing is that, you know, the regulation has a long list of several options that you can take. And you can tell us other options that you think are also good to make sure those non-bill paying customers get it. So yeah, dropping it off at a closed town hall does not make it available unless there's some kind of like outdoor announcement board or something where it could be posted, you know, safe from the weather, where people could still walk by and see it. There are a number of options in the regulation that include things like putting it in your local newspaper, having a public service announcement read on a radio station, or putting a URL available on a local newspaper. So we think the intent of the regulation can still be met. And obviously, you know, the message from EPA remains the same that we've been telling you as well. You're still expected to meet your regulatory options. So there's the regulatory need is three good faith efforts to reach non-bill paying customers. Obviously, if you're having a lot of challenges, call our offices, talk through options with us, or email us, and we can discuss other options.
Okay. Great. Thank you for that, Damon. And you know, again, we will write this up and have more detail on the various good faith methods. And again, the invitation, if you're uncertain or want to talk through it, to contact your regional DEP office is always a good one. We got this question that we're going to need to do some more research on. It came in and it said, clarification on who is notified of addressees with positive COVID-19 hits. We had to deal with a burst pipe. Only afterwards were we informed by the first responders that the house was on the list of positive results. Both the DPW and water departments, are they now at risk? They were told by the first responders that only fire and police were allowed that information. So the question is, is there some way for a utility to know if there's somebody positive in a dwelling or a building that you're entering? A couple of thoughts there. Again, in terms of whether or not you can learn it from a third party source, we're going to investigate that. We need to make sure that we're telling you the right thing and the legally accurate thing. You know, as we've talked about also in past sessions, this is one of those practices, and I realize where you may be dealing with different situations. It may be easier or harder to do this, but in terms of some of the practices we talked about, I think when we were talking about something that some utilities were looking at for testing a few weeks ago, you know, the idea of making sure that people are asking whether or not there's somebody in the house that, if there's somebody that you can engage with before entering the dwelling to ask whether or not there's somebody that, in the house that you know, has been exposed is one of the measures. And I realize there's, you know, depending on the situation, that may be easier or harder to do, but where it is possible, that would be important. In terms of whether or not this information can be shared more broadly, you know, beyond first responders, we'll have to get back to you. I believe it is limited, but we'll follow up. Okay, so we got another question here. One of the speakers during yesterday's COVID-19 pandemic application briefing mentioned that the 2 hours attending the briefing was a reimbursable expense. It follows that the attendance and participation in the weekly DEP COVID briefings would be FEMA reimbursable expenses for water and wastewater personnel. Should water and wastewater personnel keep a record of their attendance at these briefings and submit their time along with other expenses to FEMA through their municipality or district? You know, keeping track of the time is probably prudent. We will find out we need to talk to MEMA, and who in turn needs to talk to FEMA about whether this time is reimbursable, and we will try to get back to you by next week on that. The next question here is, let's see, hold on a second, the next question is, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time. Okay, could the local board of health rule that PWS staff obtain medical clearance before returning to work after a potential coronavirus exposure? Staff that cover both drinking water and wastewater duties were performing a necessary sewer line repair and learned that there was a COVID-19 positive person in an upstream home facility connected to that sewer line. The Board of Health told the workers that they could not return to the drinking water plant until each worker received a medical clearance. However, the PWS has limited staff, and continuity of essential drinking water tasks was put in jeopardy by this order. So, as I understand the question, you know, you're being told by the Board of Health that you cannot return to the drinking water plant until each worker receives a medical clearance. Again, you know, as we've been saying, when we've talked in the past, a lot of times, you know, it is the local boards of health that are making these determinations. We at DEP do not have a separate protocol, and again, we do not have a lot of information on testing capacity. But this might be one of those cases. I might invite the person that was raising that question, if you don't mind, to identify yourself to either your regional drinking water staff. I'd say not only your regional drinking water staff, but Kathleen Baskin, who's on the call at kathleen.baskin@mass.gov, if you're needing help, in terms of the testing, you know, that it hasn't been able to be, you know, they haven't been able to get a medical person to help clear them, let us know, and we'll see what kind of advice the command center can give us for this particular case where somebody's, you know, being told that they can't come back to work. The next one I'm going to ask the drinking water staff to help me answer. Are public water systems allowed to collect a special sample for evaluation purposes for an interior location inside a home or business prior to selecting the site as an alternate routine sample location for bacteriological analysis during the COVID-19 emergency? And I might ask the drinking water program to answer that.
This is Damon. So our answer was no. For interior locations, you know, we would expect that you would simply you know, exercise your professional judgment to determine if it's an appropriate site. You know, like if you were looking at any other home, you want to rule out things like point of entry treatment in that home and make sure it's not doing something that could alter its representation of the distribution system. You want to make sure it's a clean area. You're not using like a slop sink for that kind of bacteria sampling. But we specifically evaluate or develop the evaluation sample option just for exterior sample sites.
Okay, thanks, Damon. One last thing before we throw it open to questions that we may not have picked up here, is that we are continuing to put more things online at our Mass DEP COVID website for water suppliers and wastewater operators. One of the things, we've had some things up already about hydrant monitoring, spigot monitoring, some emergency certification forms, the results of the operator sharing survey, new items that we have up now are information on flushing after closure or low flow. We got in a question last week about the difference between a place that has been completely closed versus a place that has been operating at low flows, and the program has put guidance up on that. And then I'm going to just do a reminder again about the PPE cloth mask survey. We really want to encourage you to fill that out so that we're able to be ready to roll as soon as possible when these masks arrive and be able to design with our utility partners and the associations that are helping us, you know, an effective distribution program. So take a look at that as well on the website. So with that, Jen, I don't know if we've gotten or other questions that have come in.
Yep. We have one through chat in terms of the good faith distribution on the CCR. So this person hands them out when they do cross connection surveys, and they're wondering if that constitutes a good faith effort.
This is Damon. I can take a stab at that one. I saw it in the chat and started thinking about it. The intent of the good faith effort is to send them out in the same time frame that the CCRs are delivered. So if you're talking about cross connection surveys you do over the course of 12 months, then that would not meet the good faith efforts. But in general, if you are actually handing out CCRs and you're doing it around that time period, that is a good faith action, because the regulation does talk about just dropping them off. The fact that you go to the extra step and explain them is great, but just providing them to people that consume the water and are not bill payers is a good faith effort.
Damon, could you comment also, a part of the question that had come in earlier was digital signboards. Is digital signboards considered a good faith effort?
Yeah, so I didn't get a clarification on whether that was one of those movable ones where you could actually position it around town, like the no speeding ones, or if it was a digital board that's connected to your facility's main building. The former, where you could actually drive it around town and park it and tell people, here's our CCR URL, I would consider that a good faith effort. The latter, where you're just having a sign that's on your building, no, I wouldn't consider that one, because it doesn't get out there and actually tell people where they can get this information.
Okay. Another question, this one would be for Mike Maynard. Mike, could you comment on the status of upgrade requests from operator in training to full licenses? How is the board is handling review of those applications currently?
Yes, on Friday, actually I worked with DPL last week, and we have established a secure location so that all applications and upgrades that are being received have been stored in a secure location so they can be reviewed remotely by myself and by the vice chair. So we have a number of the applications. We'll be reviewing them and making determinations on them based on their receipt. So I know this is a big obstacle for DPL because the information is private and confidential with Social Security numbers, but they have removed that obstacle. So we should be issuing those as quickly as possible.
Great, thank you. If sure. anyone has questions, they can certainly email them to me right now, jpederson, P-E-D-E-R-S-O-N, @masswaterworks.org, and we can read them. I do have someone with their hand raised, so if that person has a particular question, they can unmute themselves at *6. That's a 508-328 number. I'm not sure if your hand is raised inadvertently, but you can feel free to unmute yourself if you have a question. Okay, that might be an inadvertent hand raise. Those are the only questions that we've gotten in right now. Commissioner, would you like to open the floor if anyone else wants to unmute?
Sure. If anyone would like to unmute, we'll do our best to try to answer the question or take the comment.
Again, *6 if you want to unmute. Let's see, we have another. Another question in the chat. What is required as a proof for good faith efforts in regards to the CCR? So if I could expound, so they put the digital signboard out, would they have to take a picture of the digital signboard and submit it? How do they prove these good faith efforts?
This is Damon. It's a certification on the form. You would just describe what you did in the form. So if we're talking like a mobile signboard, you could just list the dates where you had the signboard out and like where it was.
Do public water systems have to conduct spring RPBP testing normally twice a year?
Damon, could I ask you to take that one again?
Yep, sorry, I was taking a note on it. So our initial answer was that no. We are considering pushing those off to later parts of the year if you think you can do it. You know, there was a much more nuanced answer early on in the FAQs, so I would refer you to that more detailed answer. But the state regulation is that the two tests per year for these types of cross-connection devices had to be 5 months apart, but even that could be waived. So in fact, you could potentially still get out there maybe once this emergency lifts, but we also then said we were going to waive the initial test for that type of device to just get one test done this calendar year and this calendar year only, just due to the emergency.
All right, I don't see any other questions coming in. I will, if I could, just expound a little bit upon your point in the beginning, Commissioner Suberg, about the financial impact. So for those who may not be aware, MEMA is holding applicant briefings. They've held a few. The next one for municipal applicants is Thursday, April 30th from 2:30 to 4:30. And I had sent information out through our email list to our members about that. It's a webinar. It sounds like someone on the call had already participated in the last one that they did, which was last Thursday. So MEMA has that if you're trying to figure out how to navigate the FEMA reimbursement piece. Mass Waterworks has formed a small work group to look at whether we can come up with a standardized template for water systems to begin tracking their financial impacts, and whether that be related to the amount of customers in arrears or loss of revenue, loss of businesses going forward after the pandemic. We realize it's going to be hard to standardize it completely because people deal with billing and customer classes in different ways, but we are going to do our best to try and come up with some sort of template that water systems can use to begin documenting their need, because it's going to be important as the federal government talks about financial relief that we're able to actually document that. So I guess I would ask the water systems to begin thinking about how they're calculating those financial impacts so that you're prepared when and if the conversations come about stimulus or rate relief discussions. And if you have a strong interest in joining our little work group, you can feel free to email me. But we've got several large and small systems represented on that. So it was interesting this morning hearing the range in ways people bill and classify customers and that sort of thing. So we will do our best on that. That we hope we'll be able to get out relatively soon, because we know that people are already beginning to look at that. Anybody else have any last minute questions before we end the call? If you do, now's the time. *6 to unmute, *9 to raise your hand, Damon says. So feel free.
I found that online.
All right. So with that, I guess we can end the call now, and next Tuesday at 2 p.m. for folks that are on the call, we'll send out information.
Great. And I'll do one more plug for filling out the mask survey.
Yes, definitely. And that survey was sent out through the DEP Public Water System list and through the Mass Waterworks list, as are other groups sending it out. So again, please only fill it out once, but do fill it out, because it's important that we know how many masks are needed in particular areas. Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate your time on these calls. And Jane, thank you as well for your advocacy on the masks.
Yep, thank you, and appreciate the opportunity to engage and stay in touch, and we'll follow up on some of the homework assignments we got as a result of this call.
Great. Stay safe, everyone. Thank you.
Bye-bye.